And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, live from Los Angeles, California, where the great Jackie McMullen has made a huge mistake, which is publishing an outstanding feature story when she is in the same city as me, because that means she has to come on my podcast, or because I will not stop asking her to. Jackie McMullen, how are you?
I love being on your podcast. Now, can I just tell the story quickly that the last time we were on the podcast,
sure,
we were talking about Shooting Touch, that organization I was involved with in Rwanda, and this is how much clout the Low Post has. Some gentleman from Georgia, whoever you are, I forget your name, sir, I apologize, listened, wrote it down, and made a very nice donation to the charity which helps kids in Rwanda. So that's the power of Zach.
It's called Shooting Touch, people.
Well, I didn't mean for that to happen again. I'm just saying, Zach, you got some juice.
It would be a nice coincidence. I like to do this when a writer I love and know writes something big. And today you came out with a monster Jamal Murray profile. And he's such a smart player to pick because he's one of these sort of swing players of the season. We don't know enough about him.
Exactly.
Now we do. So when did you pick him, and when did you go to Denver? Take us through the sort of origin story.
Well, I was watching him last year, and Doc Rivers had made an offhand comment to me about him a year ago, and he said, yeah, watch him. He said he could go either way. That's always a great comment, right? He could go either way.
Exactly.
And so I thought, oh, okay. And so I had my eye on him, and Denver started, Denver was good, and the great Kevin Arnovitz, and I had the exact same idea I did and graciously said, no, you go ahead. You take it. I think mostly because my daughter lives in Denver. So it was a little bit of a junket for me. That,
I can't think of a better reason, honestly.
But really, it just was they were an interesting team. Jokic, that's another story we should do. But I liked the way Murray played. He played with a certain amount of fire. And I like emotional players. We were talking today on The Jump about emotional shooters, which is what, I call Russell Westbrook. So I just was curious about him. I didn't really know much about him at all. And started doing a little research, started asking around, brought me all the way back around to Doc Rivers. And I said, all right, what is it about Jamal Murray? And he told me, which was in the piece, that he was watching him play and he was just all over the place, missing shots like crazy. And he turned to Lawrence Frank and said, that kid's going to lead the scoring in someday. And Lawrence Frank is like, what are you talking about? He can't hit a shot. I mean, his rookie year, he didn't hit a shot for the first five games.
I had forgotten about
that. Right. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Right. And then Doc just said, no, he's going to because he thinks he will. And so that was sort of the springboard. I guess I was in Denver, early December.
Okay.
Early to mid-December, spent 3 days there, got to talk to Jamal, got to talk to his teammates, the coaches, some of the opposing players, and then his dad came into town, and I got to speak with him. I actually spoke with him over the phone, but he was someone that I really thought I needed to meet because, of course, he was the central figure in the story, and I wasn't going to be comfortable writing about Jamal and his dad unless I actually got to sit down and meet his dad and talk with him a little bit.
So let's talk about the dad, because as you said, Roger is the center of the story. Just the details of their workouts when he was a kid, but push-ups in the snow, laps before school, conditioning routes straight uphill that were run sideways or backwards. He disconnects the TV, no cell phones. This is a sports parent. Sounds like a sports parent.
Right.
And usually when you get a parent like this, and he's in Denver a lot, I believe, right?
Yes. Well, his full-time job now is to
Jamal.
Manage Jamal. So, yes, he doesn't live there, no. He lives in Ontario still. He has a younger son who he's also training, Lamar.
Now, before you get to Denver, I bet you already know he's going to be the centerpiece of the story, right?
Well, it's funny because I certainly had done a little research and there was some stuff in passing about his dad. But whenever I talked to NBA types, which is what we usually do first, right, nobody knew anything about him. Nobody knew about the dad. And, Mike Brown was telling me a story about him playing the U.S. in Pan Am championship game. And the dad just wasn't coming up. So I thought, well, that's interesting. And then when I did a little bit of research and asked the Nuggets PR staff, and Nick O'Hare was very helpful with this story, so shout out to Nick. Then I started hearing about him. And then you start saying, oh, wait. Uh-oh.
That's what I was going to get at, because usually when teams talk about parents like this or relatives like this, it's always bad. It's
right.
always we
but
need
that's
to
– why this story was so cool, I
right.
thought. You
right.
know?
So you have a line in here. The Nuggets say Roger Murray has been a supportive parent who has never demanded more shots or more time for his son, nor has he launched a Murray baller brand, a baller shoe, which I like, or fed inflammatory quotes to the media. He's ever present, yet ever respectful. Did they tread carefully when talking about him, or are they just sort of, they're totally fine?
I think there's a little hesitation because you're talking about someone that you know is very, very important to Jamal. But, you know, Tim Connolly was very open about it. When I was there, he saw Roger before the game. They hugged. I mean, you know, he was genuinely glad to see him. He didn't see me, so he didn't do it for my benefit. And, Michael Malone is the coach. Obviously, he's got to walk a bit of a fine line, but I thought his quotes were very revealing in themselves. You know, his point is, yes, Roger's around. He knows Jamal better than ever. He has certain ideas about what Jamal should be doing, but he's never let that interfere with what we're trying to do. And the bigger point that he made was, in today's NBA, with all the things we have to contend with, think about it.
Yeah.
Players and clubs, all, you know, criminal activity. We could go on all day about all the stuff that goes on. For our biggest problem to be a father who's around and cares about his son, I'll take that problem, if you want to call it a problem.
How was Jamal when you got to sit down with him?
Well, he was a little reticent at first. We didn't know each other. And I was there for a couple of days. I think it helped that some of the other players knew me, the coaches knew me. I mean, Michael, my goodness, I covered his dad, Brendan, for years. You know, I remember Michael when he was young. And so I think he had probably done his homework on me a little bit. And we sat down. He was a little defiant at times, which I think comes through in the piece. A little wary of me. You know, I think for Jamal, it's not fair to have the story be totally about his dad because he's the one that did the work.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's the one that succeeded. And everybody makes that point, most of all his father. And the part that really caught me, and it's the only part that I worry a little bit about, because I really think this relationship, even though it looks unhealthy to all of us from the outside, and as you know, we were with a prominent assistant coach recently together who said, this is crazy. This is stupid. This is crazy. Having been watched them and watched them interact, my only concern is at one point he said, when he was in the slump, he said, oh, I don't want to let my dad down.
Mm-hmm.
When I miss a shot, I don't want him to be disappointed. If I make a mistake, I know nobody else is going to notice, but he's going to notice. So that was the only thing that gave me pause. You know, because you can't, when you make a mistake, you shouldn't look to your coach, but you sure as heck shouldn't look in the stands at your dad either.
Right, right.
So, but what I like, and what I think I've seen is, and it's mentioned in the piece, is that, look, he's in the NBA. His horizons have expanded. They have to. And so Roger Murray doesn't know about sleep habits or sleep science or nutrition or he does know about meditation, but some of the mental health things that these you know, we have state-of-the-art things happening with these teams. And I think he knows, I know what I know and I know what I don't know. And I think that's why it works.
The meditation stuff is interesting. I didn't know that about him.
Right.
Tell people about
how
deep that goes for him.
So this father, we just read about the push-ups, the pull-ups. My favorite was they grew up in, you know, they lived in Ontario, so they immediately flood all the basketball courts in the winter.
That's right.
And he dribbled a basketball on ice. And he said, I have very good balance. That's a learned behavior.
That was dribbling the ball on ice. Is a lot. That's a lot to ask.
Right,
ice is very slippery.
No, right. And so, to me, that was really.
You didn't have people who did that at the University of New Hampshire, like flood their lawn. Like, you know, were there frats at UNH?
There were frats at UNH.
None of them flooded the lawn with water to play hockey or something?
They did, but no one was dribbling a basketball that I can recall. They used, you know, at UNH, the tradition is you throw a dead fish on the ice. You know this about UNH, right?
No.
They score a goal. Yeah, I don't think they are allowed to do it. It was a squid, and I don't know. I don't think they're allowed to do it anymore.
We had a tradition at Dartmouth. One of the frats iced their lawn.
Fun.
And at Winter Carnival every year, which is essentially just a party weekend.
Right, right.
You would line up beer kegs one after the other, and someone would, I think on skates, or maybe they would just run, I can't remember, skate up to the line of beer kegs and just jump. Over them.
Seriously.
As far as many as you could get. And,
wow.
And
can you skate?
No.
I can't skate either, and that's terrible. I'm from New England.
No, I really would like to learn how to skate.
I can't skate. I do skate, but but I don't know how to stop. I'm afraid to stop. You know, they like, and I think it was because when I was a kid, we grew up and there was a place called Rocky Woods in Medfield near where I grew up, and it was awesome. It was this big skating pond, and they had a little hut inside where you could get hot chocolate and everything. So our family used to go, and my sisters, Susie and Karen, they were both excellent skaters. And I had these really big feet, and they had me in those girls' figure skates, and well, I'm going to just declare this on the Low Post. Most people know this. I have an extra toe on my left foot.
Mm-hmm.
So the skates hurt.
Yeah, that would hurt.
And I just hated it. And so I would go inside and drink the hot chocolate. When I got older, I started dating my husband, Mike. He's like, come on, let's go skating. I'm like, nope, don't do that. Well, I wore his brother's hockey skates. And my feet felt better.
Interesting.
So then I could skate. Not really. I don't know how to stop. I can skate backwards, though.
But I have to say, I don't really have any desire to learn how to skate.
I do just because I live in New England. We live on a lake. We have a lake house in Ospe, New Hampshire. And in the winter, if it doesn't snow right away, it's just fantastic. And you know what else is funny about skating? I like to skate with a hockey stick and we hit the puck because I used to play street hockey a lot.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how all of a sudden I feel comfortable with the stick in my hand. You can lean on it and it's pretty interesting.
Okay.
There's nothing like pond hockey. Nothing like it.
They banned the keg jump at school.
They should.
And
they should. I'm in favor of that.
When I spoke to the sports analytics class there right before the season, and a few of us went out to dinner, and I asked the kids, mm-hmm. they're college kids, about it, and they did not even know what I was talking about.
Oh,
that's how
that's
old
sad.
I am now. They're like, yeah. What are you talking about? It's very sad.
That's sad.
Yeah, but he grew up in Kitchener, Ontario.
Yeah.
Doing all this stuff.
I forget what you asked me. Sorry.
I don't even remember.
We went off on a tangent.
Oh, the skating. That was one of your, the meditation. Yeah. Meditation.
Oh, the meditation. That's where we are. Okay, right. So his dad, Roger, in addition to wanting to have him be well conditioned, was very much, he was a disciple of Michael Jordan. That's how he fell in love with basketball, the dad, by mm-hmm. watching that. But he was also a disciple of Bruce Lee and martial arts. And of course, meditation is a huge part of martial arts and kung fu. And so very early on, Jamal was meditating every day, set aside a certain amount of time every day to meditate, including one day when an assistant coach, Kenny Payne from Kentucky, came on a recruiting visit, and Jamal was done with his workout, and he gets up ready to go talk to him. His father's like, nope, you need to give us a few minutes. And there's Jamal sitting in the corner with his legs crossed and his eyes closed and meditating. And what I liked about it is he talked about that stretch we were talking about before, his first five games of his rookie year, 17 misses in a row. And he's like, I know what I got to do. I got to meditate so I can shoot better. And so he closes his eyes. All right, I'm going to meditate. But what he was really doing was like all he was thinking about was how I got to shoot better. So there was a little bit of personal growth there when he realized, okay, meditation isn't to help me figure out how to shoot better.
Right.
It's to quiet my mind. It's to have me breathe. It's to have me have my body relax, to get my heartbeat lower, to take myself outside myself for just a few minutes every day. And so I kind of liked that he figured that out all on his own.
I need to learn how to do that. One of my favorite little asides, but when you have a story this long, it takes these little asides that I love. I love that Kyrie, so you talked to Kyrie.
I did, yep.
Because he was famously mad that Jamal Murray tried to get 50
Very
points.
Very mad. Yeah.
Which I think you should just go get 50 points. I don't mind.
It's so funny. I asked a lot of players about this. I didn't put in the story, but I asked a ton of them, and it was absolutely, everybody's like, I totally get why Kyrie did what he did, but I would have totally done what Jamal
right.
did. So everybody, Draymond Green was one of the people that said that to me. Everybody agreed that it was okay. I think what wasn't okay was what he did to Lonzo Ball.
Yeah, that was strange, and I'm glad you got into it in the story, because I was. It's funny, there are so many things that happen in the NBA every damn night. There's some, mm-hmm. like Devin Booker and Gorgui Dieng last night.
Right.
That you forget some of them, and as I was like 400 words into your story, and I thought, boy, I forgot the thing with Lonzo Ball. I wonder if she's going to get into the Lonzo Ball. He did it twice. He went at Lonzo twice. And like the first time was like for no reason really, other than, you know, everyone liked going at Lonzo.
Well, I think the reason was that, you know, Lonzo was, you know, not playing. He was struggling a little bit at that time. He wasn't, you know, playing like a number two pick. And here's Jamal Murray, who no one's ever heard of from Ontario, the number seven pick, who was like, yeah, man, I just outplayed you. Everybody should know it. Let me just do a little dance around you.
Yeah.
And, you know, Cal Perry, who he played for at Kentucky, said he's walking around with a little chip on his shoulder. And I wish I, you know, the story was already long enough, but I could have gone on all day about this whole idea of Canadian slights. and how Canadian players feel lumped together. They're all soft, you know. And
people say that about Canadian players?
They do. They absolutely do. And part of it is because I think a lot of them feel like Andrew Wiggins is the poster boy of Canadian players. And I always say, did you all forget Steve Nash?
Is Steve Nash right? Not soft? Tristan Thompson's not soft.
Not soft. And certainly Jamal Murray
is for sure not soft. In fact, one of my favorite things about Jamal Murray is, you know, he's like a bob and weave player. Like he and Jokic have that bob and weave give and go game.
Aren't they fun to watch, the two of them together? And they get along really well, by the way.
They do.
They do. They really do. And they're very, very different, but they get along great.
That is an odd couple. That's an NBA odd couple.
It is. I think Jokic just gets along with everybody. And actually, so does Jamal. His teammates really, really like Jamal. For all this intensity that I wrote about and his dad, everybody really likes him. He's a good kid. You know, all the people that he got on the crosshairs with, Kyrie and Luke Walton, they're all like, oh, no, he's fine. We're past it. Oh, he's just a young guy. He's great, you know.
But for all that bobbing and weaving and that low-to-the-ground stuff, when he gets a lane to the basket, he goes for it.
He
will try and hammer people, and he is aggressive. He's very, very fun to watch.
He is, and he's very, you know, he's been working towards this his entire life. And as he says, you think this is hard? The NBA is hard? Are you kidding me? Compared to what I've been doing, this is easy.
It's interesting, though, that he was both reticent with you and talked about slumps, because he's started every season in the NBA. It's only three now. Very slowly.
Yes.
And I was in Denver last year in November, and he was just in a hellish slump. And not only that, he was passing up open three-pointers to drive in the lane and take these floaters that were driving me crazy watching, and subsequently I found out driving the coaches crazy and driving him crazy. And so I was there at a practice one day, and I had to interview three, four other people. I couldn't get Jamal. And Nick O'Hare, the PR person you just talked about, said, hey, I think Jamal's still here. I think he's shooting by himself in the gym. And he was just sitting there by himself, practices over, shooting. Literally zero people were in the gym. There wasn't even someone like cleaning up in the gym.
Yeah, well, he's going back there at midnight and doing this.
And he was shooting, and I waited for him to finish, and then I walked after him, and he didn't know me. So I don't blame him, but he was in such a funk. He didn't want to talk about what kind of funk he was in.
Sure.
He did not want to talk to me at all. He gave me some clipped four-word answers. I didn't blame him. Like I said, dude, I wasn't upset. I just had to get him. It was part of the story. I had to get him. But I saw him, like, at the low point, and how sort of, like, with all the – despite all the meditation and all the perspective you're talking about, like, he – was fighting himself, and it seemed that comes through in your story.
Yeah, it's still happening. And, you know, Mike Malone pulled him aside earlier this year when he went to one of those little slumps. He's an inconsistent shooter, and that's what's keeping him from being an all-star. Maybe, I don't know, maybe somebody will squeak him in. I don't think he'll make it this year, but he's going to get some consideration, I would say. I don't think he's on my final ballot or yours, but he's in the mix, right?
We got to get the conference thing out.
I agree.
I mean, I did my full 12-man rosters because I like to start from scratch and do all of them. I vote for the starters like you, but then I do the whole rosters. And it's like you get down to spots 11 and 12 in the East. You're like, oh, my God. I'm reaching. And you get down to spots 11 and 12 in the West, and there's literally 20 guys, maybe 15 or 12, that you would put in the East game over anyone that gets in from the East.
Oh, you know, it's funny. I saw your ballot, and I always do my own just for fun. I don't ever, you know, publish it. But I, as you know, I'm not a huge LaMarcus Aldridge fan, but of course he's an all-star. I actually had to put him ahead of Karl Anthony Towns.
Interesting.
Because I just finished a piece on Karl, and maybe that's why. And as much as I like Karl, and I mean, he's obviously very talented, I just think it matters, like, do you get it done consistently? And his numbers suggest that he does. Mm-hmm. But then I had this moment, you know, where he was in Philadelphia and he just didn't show up for like a super big game mentally. Just sometimes that happens to him.
Yeah, they did not show up in that game. It was really interesting to watch that and to hear you talk to them. I read the piece last week, obviously, to talk to them about it. And how, I mean, I think it was Teague who was so outwardly just, yeah, we didn't show up. They didn't want to play.
Yeah, and you know, Derek would have been that guy, but he was so distraught, he just didn't talk at all.
I didn't know until I read your piece, that he was so upset that he just couldn't talk.
This means a lot to Derek Rose. It's so much fun to see what's happening with him, and you know, we addressed it a little bit on the jump today that he's figured out how to be just a more complete player, His shot selection has changed so dramatically. I forget the numbers. Almost 52% of his shots are in the restricted area of the paint now, much different than, of course, back in the day. He's shooting 43% from the three-point. I just can't believe it.
But he's
playing so under control, Zach, and he's playing with a clear mind. And I talked to him quite a bit about it when I was out there doing this story. Mm-hmm. And the idea that, you know, he didn't know who he was. You know, he's this young kid that gets thrown into the mix, and he's an MVP at the age of 22, and this whole city is depending on him, and then he has this catastrophic knee injury, and you know, barely plays the next year, and then he's not the same, and everyone tells him, you're washed up, and he's like, well, maybe I am. Am I washed up? I don't know. And he said to me, I didn't even know myself. He said, I didn't even know I was an introvert. I didn't know what an introvert meant.
Huh.
So some of these guys, self-discovery, it takes a while.
I want to talk more about Jamal, but now that we're on this, you just did this big piece on Cat and the Jimmy Butler thing, mm-hmm. and coming out of the Jimmy Butler thing, and you went to Philadelphia and you talked to Jimmy Butler. I'm just curious, like, it's been many months of this now.
Right.
What do you think of Jimmy Butler? What's your, like, takeaway?
I think he's on thin ice, Zach. I think he's on thin ice, and I think he's a very talented player, and no one's ever called him soft either.
Oh, okay? Hell no.
No, he's a very tough player, and he on paper would be exactly what you would want on a team because he's not a selfish player. I would never say that about him. He defends. Boy, does he defend. He gets at it. He makes good decisions on the offensive end of the floor. But this, I don't know if it's, I don't know him well enough to know, is it real or is it bravado? This whole idea that I'm going to take everybody on, like, you're going to bully me. You're going to call me a bully. I'm going to bully you back and all this stuff. And, I can tell you that having spent a couple days in Philadelphia, you know, they don't love it. And I think you probably, if you read the story, you know there was one Philadelphia person in the organization that said, you know, if you want to get paid, be quiet. You might try that.
I've already said that I don't think he's getting the full 5-year max from them. And people think it's blasphemy, and his people think it's blasphemy. I don't think he's going to get the full 5-year max. Now, I think it'll be very close, but I think they're going to use that fifth year as the hammer and say, okay, you want the 5 years, you're going to get a little bit, like, I don't think it's going to be like Jokic. Jokic didn't quite get the max. He got a tiny bit less than the max.
That's an interesting question. And, you know, I would take it a step further. Are they sure they want him?
Well, they went in eyes wide open. I mean, they do a lot of deep intel.
No,
in
they
Philly.
Do.
They
right.
They knew all the stories. They heard everything. But it's another thing to live it.
And you know what else? You can know all the research and you can do all the research on that, but you can't possibly know what's going on inside Joel Embiid's head. And I'm telling you, Joel Embiid is the most important person on that franchise. It's not even close. He's got the ears of the owners. And if Joel Embiid decides Jimmy Butler's too much trouble, and I'm not saying that's what he thinks right now. I'm not saying that at all. But if it comes to that, Jimmy Butler's not winning.
They're the most fascinating chemistry experiment in the league. And I wrote about them last week.
Yes, you did. You did a nice piece on it. And I agreed with everything you said. Their parts fit sometimes, and then sometimes they don't fit at all.
But you know what? And I don't want to rehash pieces. Like, that's life. There are three star players, one of whom is an incredibly unique, and I don't necessarily mean that in a good way, and Simmons, just like a complete anomalous piece. But, you know, if you want to win, you got to make it work. If you want, like, if Joel Embiid wants to, so let's just say, take your scenario. Joel Embiid decides he doesn't want to play with Jimmy Butler. You can't just play star player roulette until you get the one that you like the best.
And we should stress we're not saying that that's what he's doing.
No. It could be any of them. Let's say any of them decide that they don't want to be with the other one or the other two. You don't get to just look up, let's rotate Klay Thompson in. Let's rotate Brad Beal in. Like, that's not how it works.
Right. But I will say this about Jimmy Butler. I think that it's legitimate if you're a player that plays with him to have questions sometimes about his demeanor. I think it's a fair question. We're on team number 3 now.
It's not for everybody.
No, it's not. He's a good, like I said, on paper, he should be my favorite player in the league because he does all the things I really like. He does the dirty things. He does the defensive things. He's unselfish. There's all sorts of reasons to like him. But at some point, you got to stop taking out your sword and just trying to cut everybody's arm off.
Yeah. Let's go back to Jamal Murray.
Okay. He's not trying to do that.
You said there was some stuff on the cutting room floor about how they drafted him 7, and I'm looking at the draft now. I will tell you the picks in the 2016 NBA draft.
Right.
Ben Simmons, Brandon Ingram, Jalen Brown, Dragan Bender, that hurts. Chris Dunn, Buddy Hield, Jamal Murray.
Right. So the draft lottery, they have the draft lottery. The Denver Nuggets are pretty sure that they think Jamal Murray is going to go in the top 3 or 4, and they pull 7. And they all walk out of there just devastated because they loved this kid. He is who they wanted. I think if they picked third, they would have picked him third. I really do. And they're like, oh, my God, we're not going to get him now. So everybody kind of knew. I think Simmons won, Brandon Ingram two, Jaylen Brown three. We heard that in Boston, but that was, you know, you weren't sure. We heard a lot of names in and out of there. Chris Dunn, I remember, we thinking maybe the Celtics
sure,
would take a flyer on at that point. So when Jaylen Brown goes through, they're like, okay, maybe. They're thinking, huh. Now, Jay Triano, who coached Jamal Murray in the Pan Am Championships mm-hmm. that we mentioned, the first win for Canada in their history, in a 70-year history, because Jamal Murray hit all the game-winning shots, he's working for Phoenix.
Yeah.
And he's in their front office, and he's like, look, I'm just telling you, Jamal Murray, man, like I'm telling you, this is who we should pick. So now we're talking four. And they're like, well, we're not sure about his skill set, and can he really shoot? And Jay's like, I'm telling you, he's just a winner. He's trying. And
this is like going to break Phoenix fans' hearts.
I know
they could
it
be sitting here looking at a Jamal Murray, Devin Booker backcourt.
Yeah. And they picked Dragan Bender instead. And so now, then it's Buddy Hield. By the way, like a year ago, you'd say, oh, well, that was bad too. But Buddy Hield's been really good. So,
yeah,
I don't think we should Buddy Hield being selected next.
Buddy Hield has been very, very good.
He's been very good. But I don't think he's Jamal Murray.
He's averaging 21 games, averaging more points per game than Jamal Murray.
I know he is, but that to me doesn't.
Not as much of a playmaker. I think most people in the league would take Jamal Murray over Buddy Hield.
But Buddy Hield has been pretty good. That's my point. But anyway, so there he was. They just couldn't believe their luck because they really considered it their luck. They had their eye on him all the way back before he was even at Kentucky.
I remember loud Pelicans Buddy Hield buzz. The Pelicans took him at six. I remember that being a thing.
Almost like a fait accompli.
People thought was going to happen. So I wonder what the pick – I wonder if it's the Bender pick. There's always the pick when you have a guy where you're – that you really want – there's always the pick above you where you're like, that's the one. And if that swings our way, then our guy's going to – I wonder if it was Phoenix.
Phoenix or Chris Dunn too, right, in Chicago, who just hasn't been healthy. And didn't Phoenix have two picks? Did they have Marquise Chris in that draft?
That is correct. They traded up to get Marquise Chris. And, did not work out.
No.
Did not work out. My favorite Kyrie Irving part of the story, by the way, is how he respects Mike Malone for saying.
I love that. You love that?
Yeah, because I love that quote. When Mike Malone says, all you fans are coming here to see the Lakers, you can enjoy the game and take the L with you out the door. I love that. I loved it
too. And I love that Kyrie said, so that's the kind of swag they have. That's what Jamal has swag. So he's totally fine with Jamal at this point, because he knows he's probably a little bit like Jamal in his own way. Kyrie, they're probably not as different as we think.
No, Jamal is really good. He's going to be better than I thought he was going to be a year ago, and it's going to be interesting to see what he gets for an extension,
right?
Because Denver will try to do that early.
And Jokic is just a delight. What a revelation!
Oh.
You know, what a revelation! Just and Jamal's right. He should shoot more.
I love Jokic. I'm a complete Jokic true believer. I was early on Jokic his rookie season, and I was high on the Nuggets this year, and mm-hmm. one of my predictions for the season was they would host a first-round playoff series.
That's awesome.
And one of their front office guys read that and called me. Or no, I was bouncing it off him, and someone in their team, I shouldn't even say front office guy, someone in their team said, you're going to be right on because Nikola's in shape. Where do you see Nikola? He's in the best shape of his life.
Right.
Well, they opened the season in L.A. I was here, mm-hmm. Nuggets-Clippers. I go in the locker room. He's got his shirt off. I'm like, this dude's not in shape.
Yeah, he's squishy.
This is a squishy guy. He looks like me.
Yeah.
And I call the guy, and I'm like, you told me Jokic was in shape. He's got a gut. I'm looking at his gut.
Yeah, right.
And they said, it's the best it's ever been.
That's funny. He's just a delightful guy. Clearly very fond of Jamal. Because I wondered, you know, if you're Jamal and you've got this single-minded idea about you want to be the best there ever is, and you're not even the best player on your team.
Yeah, but you know what's great about Jokic? You can be the leading scorer on your team.
No, that's
right. Why everybody will love him.
No, and you know what? Jamal respects so much the way Jokic plays. He's learned from him. And that's all you can hope for. And you know, you talk about the Nuggets. Let's remember Will Barton.
Just back. Gary
Harris was out. And someone else. I'm forgetting someone else. And then Monty Morris is revelation. I mean, let's give Tim Connelly some props,
God.
My gosh, the job he's done. Jokic was the 41st pick. Monty Morris.
Second round
pick. They got a bunch of guys.
Will Barton was a throw-in.
Malik Beasley.
Well, Malik Beasley has been unbelievable.
He's been great. He's a really delightful kid, and he's Jamal's best friend on the team. And he said, you know, one of the other things that made the story was that he can see it. He can see the wheels turning when Jamal misses shots, and he has to go down the end of the bench and said, cut the shoot.
Yeah.
You know, cut it out. Just shoot. Stop it. You know.
Let's talk about the Grizzlies before you get out of here.
Okay.
Woj broke the news yesterday.
Shocking. Woj broke the news.
I know. And
that's so awesome.
It's time. And the Grizzlies are putting them on the block.
Yep.
Mike and Mark. And, you know.
Are you surprised? Let me ask you. I'm surprised they're this bad. I'm surprised.
I'm not surprised.
Okay.
I'm surprised. I'm not surprised at their record in the aggregate. I'm surprised at the manner in which they got there. Like, they're like 3-20 in their last 23 games. I did not see that coming.
Yeah, I just can't. I keep thinking, why? What, you know, I love Mike Conley. I always have. I think Mark has been injured a good portion of the year. Tried to play through that the whole, you know, I kept thinking he's trying to like debunk the Europeans are soft kind of mantra, and he played through some injuries that I think have really hindered what he can do. I don't think that means he's done or anything.
No, but it does complicate his trade value because he has a player option for next year at $26 million, I think. And I predicted before the season that he would opt out and sign somewhere else.
Now that's what everybody says.
We're obviously going to. He's looks like he might get traded before to somewhere else before having getting a chance to sign.
So let me ask you this: I think he's on for $25 million.
I think it's something like that.
Okay, let me ask you now, after what's gone on this year, if he opts out, who's going to give him that money?
That's what I'm saying. Now the way he's played in the last 25 games, I don't know that that's an easy decision for him.
Right.
So if
I'm Charlotte, I'm going after him. I am.
Well, they're my favorite Marc Gasol team. I said that on The Jump today,
and I
said that on a podcast last week. And their problem is,
who do you give up? What do you have to offer?
All their contracts are just so bad.
They are.
That, like, no one is touching this Batum contract.
I know. Unless maybe you eat some of it.
So if you told me,
like, could you eat some of the Batum contract and then send him along?
I don't know.
Because I would just love to see Marc Gasol and Kemba Walker play pick and roll, wouldn't you?
Yes. If you were the Grizzlies, you could go to them, or if you were the Hornets, you could say, oh, look, we'll give you Cody Zeller. Mm-hmm. Who makes 14 next year.
By the way, he's been pretty good for them.
When he plays, is half of every season.
Right.
And the filler salary is the problem for so many of these teams. Charlotte's only two and change below, about three below the tax, so they can't take on a lot of money. Or they can't, the salaries have to match very closely. Mark makes 25, I think, so you got to get close to $12 million more or $11 million more of extra money. Jeremy Lamb alone doesn't quite get you there, but maybe Cody Zeller, Jeremy Lamb, Malik Monk, and a pick get you in the conversation. That would get you in the conversation, I think, depending on the protections of that pick.
Of that pick. Yeah, but the pick is what matters.
They're my favorite Gasol team because they're completely desperate to make the playoffs, and their center position is like a sinkhole of crap.
You know what? And it's their fault for signing Dwight Howard. It's not like everybody didn't know that was a bad idea. Now, we had no way of knowing he'd be out the whole year. But why would anybody think that was a good idea?
And no one understands why they didn't just waive him the same way that Brooklyn just waived him.
It's weird.
I've said it before. My other Marc Gasol team is Detroit, and just a straight Drummond Marc Gasol swap where Detroit just gets off.
Detroit has to do something. They're the team I would put in the lead for Mike Conley for the same reason. Their pieces don't fit, and they were in Boston very early in the year, and I saw Dwayne Casey, and we were chatting a bit. And I said to him, what are you going to do with this team? Because these pieces do not fit. Now, of course, Dwayne Casey isn't going to say to me, I know, it's terrible. Listen, he's not going to say that. He's going to put the best face on it. But because the East is so weak, I think they could trade for Mike Conley or Gasol, either one, and help themselves immeasurably. But who's going to take back? Would you take back Reggie Jackson if you're Memphis?
I think they're a candidate for both. Not both together. That's
no,
too big
right.
of a deal.
No, either.
I should say either.
Either, right.
The very first Mike Conley deal I pitched was Reggie Jackson, some filler that is actually very important what that filler is, and an unprotected or top three protected Detroit pick, and maybe throw in Stanley Johnson. Say, here's a young guy, take a shot on Stanley Johnson.
I like Stanley Johnson.
Memphis is only like a couple hundred thousand dollars below the tax themselves. So they may have to make another another trade to shed a little money here or there. But I agree with you. But that's the model of deal I think Memphis has to look at is bad contract, intriguing filler, really good asset that's a draft pick, you know, and I know you have a favorite Mike Conley team we'll talk about in a second. And I think it's just going to be a matter of who gives us the best draft assets within that model.
So because where do you stand on Reggie Jackson at this point? Where does the league stand on Reggie Jackson at this point? Just because it didn't work in Detroit, where nothing works in Detroit, I'm assuming that's killed his trade value, right?
I don't think anybody wants Reggie Jackson.
Okay, so that's sort of my point.
Yeah. So, you'd have to, like I said, I could see them arguing over, the protections on that pick.
On the pick, right.
And also whether Stanley Johnson, who's essentially a bust, gets it done.
I think a change of scenery for Stanley Johnson would help.
Hollinger likes the second draft, guys. Or if you just say, we don't want him, we want Luke Kennard. And then you start to think if you're Detroit, Mark's pretty old, or Mike, whatever it is, whichever one of them. Mike is, you know, but they're my favorite Mike team. You got another Mike team. Who's your Mike team?
I would love it if the Indiana Pacers would take a deep breath and go after Mike Conley. Because every time I talk to somebody about the Pacers in the East, they all say, yeah, but who's the clear-cut leader on the team? It's not Oladipo. Not that he hasn't been great and he hasn't played well and everybody loves him. That's all fine. But who's the leader on that team? And who's the point guard on that team? If you get Mike Conley, you get both of those things at once.
See, I love the Pacers as a fit for him. Much like I love the Jazz as a fit for him, although I don't see a deal there. People have proposed Rubio, Favors, and a draft pick. And the problem with a deal like that, although it makes sense, is that Utah is going to be very good.
Yeah, they're
going to
be good. Your draft pick isn't going to be that good.
Isn't good.
Right. But that would hold true with Indiana's pick.
Indiana is the same boat. But I love the idea for Indiana because they've carved out all this cap space this coming summer. All their deals are up except, Turner and Oladipo and some small ones.
Right.
But, you know, I just don't think a franchise like that can bank on doing better with that cap space than Mike Conley at age 29, 30, 31.
You know what? I couldn't agree more, Zach, because I remember when Larry was, still very active in the front office, he would often talk to me about the struggles of getting premier free agents to go there.
Mike is from Indiana.
Right. And here's the other thing. As much as I love the Simons, because I think they've been really great owners, they stay out of the way. They let their guys do their thing. You never hear about them. They're never in the news for all the wrong reasons. They hesitate to spend. And it's hamstrung the Indiana Pacers more than once. They don't ever, ever want to be over the cap. And I think if you took Mike Conley on, the only way it would make sense is then this summer, if you added another piece that could put you over the top. And I think that would put them over the cap. And I just don't know if they'll do it.
So here's why I'm so intrigued. I agree. Everything you said is true. And you knew Larry was going out the door when he said on record to me, for reasons I will never understand because I have no relationship with him, that there was a cap on how much he could spend, and he put it on the record. I was like, well, he's leaving.
Oh, that's been true all along. Yeah, no, he loves the Simons. They've been great to him, but it's a problem. So why would it change now is my question.
But they need a point guard, and I think there's a sense within that team of we are maxed out this talent level, and when we get into the playoffs – we know that we don't have the best player in any series against any of these other teams in the East, and we need to close that star gap a little bit. Now, Mike is not as good as the best players on those teams in the East, but it gets them a little closer.
Right, and if you don't give Oladipo and you don't give up Miles Turner, you don't give up Sabonis, that's a pretty nice little nucleus. And then you go this summer and you try to grab somebody.
So this is why I like it. You just nailed it. So everyone is pitching these deals where they give up Tyreek and Collison and Kojo. So all these expirings and a draft pick. Well, that's not good enough. Like Memphis is not doing that. All those expirings are meaningless to them.
Right.
Where it gets interesting to me is if you throw Aaron Holiday in.
Who's a good young player,
Holiday is going to be good. If you throw him in and an unprotected pick, maybe you start to get my attention a little bit. I could even see Memphis saying, well, Aaron Holiday is, a marginal first round pick and your first round pick is going to be bad. We don't care. We want Sabonis.
Mm.
And that's where Indiana is going to say, ooh.
Yeah, he's so good.
I still think, but if you gave Indiana Conley somehow, and they had cap flexibility, and they have both Turner and Sabonis, I still think eventually they're going to have to trade one of those guys because I just don't know if they can play together for more than 10 or 12 minutes a game.
Okay.
But Indiana's going to be able to do that from a position of strength. Like, everyone in the league knows how good those guys are.
Right.
If you flip that into some good stuff, like,
yeah, you're on your way.
You got a lot of stuff all of a sudden.
Mm. Turner's interesting to me because every year I voted for him. Like, this is the year he's going to be most improved. And then after a while, I'm like, okay, man, maybe he's never going to take the leap. But he's really had a very good, sneaky good year, especially defensively. He's just been, you know, which is really where he makes his money, I guess, on that end of the floor. And I was asking Nate McMillan the last time I saw him about him, and he said, you know, it's no trick, or it's not like, oh, all of a sudden he was never dedicated in the weight room or anything. He just needed to grow up. We forget how young these kids are. They just need time to grow up and to figure out what it takes. Like Jamal Murray, he's young. These kids are young.
Very, very young.
And it's easy to forget that.
You have any other teams you like for one of these guys?
No. I think it's going to be hard. I think all these scenarios we've talked about. I mean, you know, I know Tracy was talking about Orlando for Conley. I understand why they would do that. I know what your point was, where they're not there yet, so they're wasting that. I think if you're the Orlando Magic and you've had no buzz for the longest time and you could get into a playoff series, which you maybe could this because the East is so bad, and you could play a first-round playoff series in the Amway Center and Orlando Magic, the most annoying thing I've ever heard in the arena, then, you know, you fill that place up and you get people a little interested again. And even if it isn't the best thing for you to do right now, I don't know that every franchise is always operating under what the best thing to do long-term is. So maybe that makes some sense.
I still don't see it. I've been wrong many times before.
Oh,
maybe I'm wrong about this.
Maybe.
Dallas is the most obvious team for either one.
Yeah.
Dennis Smith Jr. in a big contract.
Okay, but if I'm Memphis, well, I feel bad for Dennis Smith. I feel badly for him. And Tracy touched on it today when we were on the air. You're a kid that comes in as a lottery pick, and you're somewhat of a little bit of a sensation, right? You have a good rookie year. You score points. You're not really a super efficient player, but players don't get hung up on that.
You do things.
GMs and coaches do, right?
You do exciting athletic things.
Yeah, and people like you. Yeah, and you're going to be a star. And then here comes Doncic. And then all of a sudden it's like, we don't need him. And that's pretty hard. Again, we're talking about young guys. We're talking about guys in their early 20s. That's pretty hard to process. So I'm not ready to give up on Dennis Smith as a valued member of a team.
No, no way. And so, I wouldn't be ready to give up on him as a valued member of the Mavericks. Now, again,
but the metrics tell us, you know, they're a plus 5.2, I think it is.
I know all the numbers,
yeah.
And I know some of the buzz out of the locker room is that they were ready for him not to take the Doncic
right.
well, and, you know,
good friends. They've done fine.
Yeah.
But you know what's funny? So this is something Gino Auriemma, the great UConn coach, told me many years ago. And he said to me, when a coach loves you, it's the greatest thing in the world. But the day the coach stops loving you, no matter what you do, you could score 100 points and have 50 rebounds. He's already made up his mind he doesn't like you anymore. And no matter what you do, you're never going to change his mind once he's made up his mind. And that's what I keep thinking of with Rick Carlisle, his wonderful glowing comments notwithstanding in the last 24 hours.
If they think they don't need Dennis Smith, what they will need eventually when they are ready to be good is somebody like the version of Dennis Smith that they want.
Right.
A point guard sized person who can defend other point guards, handle the ball when Doncic mm-hmm. doesn't have it, attack closeouts and get to the rim. If it's not him, you got to find it somewhere else. You might as well try and see if it can be him.
Well, it sure looks like that's what they're planning on doing. So,
I think New Orleans for Conley I like. Making the math work is tough, but they
right.
have.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Who, how, you know, they need to do something big.
Solomon Hill, Etuan Moore, Wesley Johnson, and an unprotected pick is probably not enough, and they're not going to throw in two picks. So,
I was going to say, although an unprotected pick, if it's next year,
yeah,
if you add Mike Conley, does he have enough time to pull you out of the Western abyss to get you up to the playoffs?
You could throw Frank Jackson in. I'm not sure that entices me enough.
I don't think so.
Washington for Gasol,
mm-hmm.
Mahinmi. Markieff Morris in an unprotected pick or an unprotected pick in a second. The Wizards keep saying they're not going to give up draft picks, so I don't see it.
Yeah, I don't either.
The Heat, the Spurs.
The Heat. So can we just talk about the Heat for a second? So one mistake after the next, it's stunning to me. Pat Riley, I have admired probably because I was so young when I came into the league, and the Lakers, he was the coach of the Lakers, and he would never even look at me, never mind talk to me, just because I was from Boston.
I love it. Like,
yeah,
I love it.
He's like that. And over time, like, I just wore him down, you know? So now, but I just have this incredible respect for him, because I've seen him at his best, at his worst. I've seen him when he was on top, and I've seen him, you know, when he was coach of the year and they fired him the next day. I've seen it all. And I trust his mind. I ask him a lot of questions, and sometimes he answers them and sometimes he doesn't. But they haven't done a great job there, Zach. The Johnson contracts.
Summer hurt them.
Yeah.
That summer hurt them. The Justice Winslow contract looks like it's going to be a good contract.
Yeah, he's a good player. Danny Ainge lusted after him forever and a day.
Josh Richardson.
Yep, that's fine. But they're hamstrung with a whole bunch of, like, the Kelly Olynyk contract. I mean, I covered Kelly day after day. He's one of my favorite people on this earth. And he was a plus-minus darling and all that. But he's logging DNPs now.
I know. It's not going well. But they have Bam. They have Josh Richardson. They have Winslow. And they're going to have cap space in a couple summers. And they're in Miami. And they're going to swing. They'll get themselves.
Well, they'll swing for the fences.
Chris Wallace used to work for the Heat way back when, I believe. They have a good connection with Chris Wallace. There will be phone calls between the Heat and the Grizzlies.
But I just – this little morass, this little – lull they've been in now. It's we're going on how many years?
Well, since Bron left, basically. I mean, they had the 1 year they made the playoffs.
And believe me, that was devastating. And they did nothing wrong there. And I always go back to one thing that Pat Riley told me was, back when they got the Heatles together, the Bosch, LeBron, and D. Wade, you know, it was all set and they had an unwritten agreement. And then all of a sudden, when it came to be $5, they wanted to add that extra year. And by adding the extra year, all those players requiring that, he had to start renouncing players right and left.
Yeah.
And he said to them, I hope you know you're going to destroy us for the future. And it was worth it.
Yeah.
It was worth it. But if they had just not done that, it would have been completely different. So I have never forgotten that.
One thing I should have said about Indiana and all those expiring contracts is I think Memphis could look at those expirings and at least say, hey, maybe if we get them now, we can flip them
later
before the deadline.
Yeah, possibly.
You know, I know my favorite Mike Conley, just the absolute most bonkers Mike Conley trade would be. To Philadelphia for expiring contracts and Markelle Fultz.
Wow.
And then Philly has Conley, Butler, Simmons, and Embiid.
Wow.
And you cannot pay all four of them going forward. Mathematically, this isn't a war. The Warriors got very lucky being able to balance everything for as long as they did.
Yeah, and their rent's coming here too.
Conley then gives you leverage with Jimmy. A little bit.
Like that. I love that.
I don't think that will happen because
Memphis can't afford to do that.
That's just too much. Well, maybe you throw in another pick or something, but that's my bonkers one.
I like that. But, you know, Markelle Fultz, I still believe it can happen for him. Why wouldn't I believe that? You know, it's funny. We were talking the other day when Doncic had the triple-double. He was the second youngest player in NBA history to have a triple-double. The first youngest was Markelle Fultz.
That's unbelievable.
Isn't it?
I really hope we're not reciting that stat in like 20 years. It's
hope
the
so
only
too.
Thing that is relevant
I
about
Markelle. I hope that for him too. I do. And I don't see how he can stay in Philly. He needs to change the scenery.
It's over. It's just a matter of when. And I don't know what to believe. I've given up trying to figure out what to believe. All right, you've got to go. You've got to go do other things because you're in
apparently
demand.
Apparently I do. Look at
that. And you're Jackie Mack. The story on Jamal Murray is why no stage is too big for the Nuggets, Jamal Murray, and how Jamal Murray was raised to become a star. It's on ESPN.com. Jackie is the best. It's a great story. Read that. Read the cat one, which I didn't get to talk too much about. The Carl Anthony Townsend was awesome, too. Jackie, I always appreciate you lending a little bit of your time to this silly exercise.
Absolutely. Anytime you want, Zach. This is my favorite part of my week so far.
Oh, good. That's very nice to hear. All right, Jackie Mack, everybody. The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.